Hey, welcome everybody to the Greatest Mixtape Podcast. My name is Eric.
And my name is Mac.
And tonight we're going to do something we haven't actually done for at least a few episodes.
Yeah, it's been a long time where, you know, we've used this phrase before, but hey man, we're doing some jazz tonight. We're improvising, man.
Right,
we're just
exactly.
Let shit happen. Yeah.
We're riffing. We're just going to see where it goes. Yeah, so we don't have a specific topic in mind. You know, a lot of times we'll do a list or a countdown or a favorite this or tonight we're just going to reach in the bag of topics and just kind of talk and see where things take us.
We're a can of mixed nuts. That's what we are.
I've been called worse, for being totally honest here.
I always find myself kind of sifting out the almonds. I don't like to eat almonds.
You're not an almond type of guy?
Nah.
I dig the almonds. I dig the almonds. I'll do that.
Give me some cashews. You know, I'm good to go.
Anyway. That was way too much about our favorite nuts. So, all right. Well, Mac, why don't you pick the first topic here?
Okay. This is going to be a topic. I mean, this is something that just in regular conversation, we talk about all the time.
Sure.
The band Metallica, some of you may have heard of them.
They've got a couple of big albums.
Yeah, yeah. But they are one of the greatest cover bands ever.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So that's what we want to talk about. Like, we're both going to pick our favorite Metallica cover song.
Yeah. And again, that's a pretty hefty list of songs to pick from, too. They have done, I mean, entire albums, double albums of cover songs. I mean, there's a lot to pick from.
Yeah, a lot of material there. So I'll jump in here.
All right, go for it.
I'm going to go with their cover of Am I Evil? The original artist was Diamond Head. That song was from their 1980 album, Lightning to the Nations. And then Metallica covered it. It was originally a B-side on Creeping Death.
Yep.
1984, yeah. But then also showed up on the 1998 covers album, Garage Inc.
Yep.
But one of the heaviest intros
of
all time. It's slow. Plodding build up,
such a heavy riff.
Oh, that riff kicks in, dude. It's so heavy.
Yep.
And you know, if you go back and listen to the original Diamond Head version, fantastic song,
great song.
Yeah, but Metallica just gave it more of an edge.
Yeah,
made it heavier, and it's just, you feel that build in your chest.
Yeah,
and it's just so strong. And then, you know, it's a longer song. Yeah, of course you have the guitar solo, but then towards the end of the song, that main riff comes back in.
Yeah.
And just blows your head off, man.
Yeah.
It's so great. That's my favorite Metallica cover song.
That's cool, man. And in full disclosure, that was also on my list. But in typical me fashion, I had a couple because I can't pick. So yeah, that's definitely one of my favorites too. And that was my first exposure to a Metallica cover song. And at like, 13 years old when that thing came out, I believe it was 1984.
Yeah.
I didn't know Diamond Head anyway. So, I mean, there's no reason I would have known that was a cover song, you know, until you're reading the liner notes and you realize, wait a minute, this wasn't written by Hetfield and Ulrich. So you're like, wait, who was this band?
Yeah.
So it kind of led me down the path of, you know, these are some of their influences, you know, the new wave of British heavy metal, like, you know, bands like that and Tigers of Pantang and Saxon and bands like that, you know? So yeah, I'm right there with you, man. That's, I'm a big fan of that song. And to this day, it's a staple in their live set.
Mm-hmm.
It's just such a great song. I think it stands up to this day too.
And I think that song was only 4 years old when they covered it.
Yeah. That's crazy, right?
Yeah.
It's not like they're going back 20 years and picking some obscure, you know, old song. It was 4 years old.
Right.
That's so great. I remember being a teenager and having the cassette single for Creeping Death and just, you know, wore that thing out, man. I've said this before on the podcast, but, you know, there's been a few tapes in my life that I've bought multiple copies of because I legit wore them out. Mm-hmm. And that cassette single for Creeping Death with the B-side being Am I Evil, it was, probably 3 or 4 copies of that.
And like you said, it's a staple of their live show. And if you've seen Metallica and you've seen Am I Evil live, it's incredible.
It's killer. It's so killer. Nice, dude. Good choice, man. Well, what would have been my second choice? Probably not a big shock. It's actually two songs from one of my favorite bands of all time that they kind of slammed together and released as one track off of the 1987 Garage Days Revisited album. Mm-hmm. It was the first recording they did with Jason Newsted, their bass player, after unfortunately Cliff Burton passed away. But I'm talking about Last Caress / Green Hell.
Wow.
Covers of the Misfits. Again, two songs that are super, super short, so they just slammed them together and kind of made one sort of medley out of it. But oh my God. God, that was my first real exposure to the Misfits as well. I hadn't really, Metallica. I mean, honestly, the Misfits owe a lot of their current popularity to Metallica. Cliff Burton had the iconic Crimson Ghost skull tattoo on his arm, which, you know, a lot of people are like, what's that? Yep. They would wear their t-shirts on stage. And back then there was a huge separation between metal and punk. You know, you were you were kind of one or the other. There wasn't a lot of metal kids like us that had really opened up to the to punk rock yet.
Yeah,
you know, and Metallica turned all of us on to the Misfits, and some of us just hook, line, and sinker, man. I know I did.
Yeah,
I was like, what is this? These guys are crazy. Got me into a lot of other punk rock after that, but yeah, definitely I owe my love of the Misfits definitely to Metallica.
Yeah, for sure, man, for sure. And it's funny, I'd forgotten about those two, that cover song.
Yeah.
And because I thought you were going to go with Stone Cold Crazy.
Well, that's, again, cover of the on Queen my short song, list, absolutely.
Yeah, but you're right, the cover of the Misfits is just fantastic.
And they also did another Misfits song. They did Die, Die, My Darling.
That's
on,
right.
I think that was on Garage Inc., I believe. God, so many, again, so many cover songs from Metallica. But yeah, pretty much everything they decide to cover just comes out amazing. Even some of the stuff that they released during their commercial phase, you know, the Turn in the Page or Whiskey in a Jar. You know, some of those are a little more obscure for a band like Metallica. But man, looking back on them, you're like, Jesus, these are fantastic covers, man.
Yeah.
You know, so an uncanny ability to pick amazing songs and then totally putting their stamp on it and just doing an amazing job, you know, reimagining those songs.
And I don't know what album it's on, but they also do, obviously, they do a great cover of 53rd and 3rd by the Ramones.
Oh, yeah. I don't know what that's on, actually. Yeah. But yes, yeah. Yeah, again, man, dipping into the punk rock stuff. And I mean, you know, they go from Bob Seger to, you know, the Ramones and the Misfits. Yep. And I mean, just great stuff, man. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, man. Love Metallica. Great, great, great band. Original music, obviously, but just a fantastic cover band.
Yeah, and still to this day, man, you can say what you want about, you know, their music catalog over the last, you know, 15, 20 years or whatever. But man, live, they just still deliver, man. They put on such a fun show, and, you know, to hear those classic songs live and loud, and it's a blast, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love them live.
Right. Where are we going to next, sir?
So let's take a bit of a left turn from the Metallica and metal side of things. Let's revisit a topic that I think we had touched on at least a little bit in some of our conversations in the past. I don't know if we fully covered it as a segment on the show before, but let's talk about our favorite rap/hip-hop verse.
Yes.
Now, again, here's a topic where this one, man, it was so hard because not only do you have to, you know, find a song with an amazing verse in it, but a lot of those songs have four or five amazing verses. So you've whittled it down to a song, but now you got to pick one. Like, well, I don't know, is verse two better than verse one? Or, man, there's just so much great bars out there that my God. Yeah, it was a bit daunting, but I'm interested to see what you came up with on this one.
I mean, like you said, there's 20 different ways I could have gone on this one. But I had to go with Fife Dog's verse on Can I Kick It by Tribe Called Quest.
It's so
good, man. It's fairly simple.
Yeah.
You know, in its scheme. But it's just delivered so well.
Yeah.
And there's just a couple slight little, like, moments of genius in there. Different inflections or emphasizing different words that give it a twist, and then it comes back to the main rhyme. You know, so, I mean, can I do this here?
Oh, 100%. I would be upset if you didn't.
All right. Can I kick it to my tribe that flows in layers? Right now, Fife is a poem sayer. At times, I'm a studio conveyor. Mr. Dinkins, would you please be my mayor? You'll be doing us a really big favor. Boy, this track really has a lot of flavor. When it comes to Rhythm's Quest, it's your savior. Follow us for the funky behavior. Make a note on the rhythm we gave you. Feel free, drop your pants, check your hair. Do you like the garments that we wear? I instruct you to be the obeyer. A rhythm recipe that you'll savor. Doesn't matter if you're minor or major. It's the tribe of the game, rhythm player, as you inhale like a breath of fresh air.
Nice job, dude.
And
get this man a gold chain.
the little, just a little stroke of genius.
Yeah.
Do you like the garments that we wear? He didn't say garments.
Right. Garments.
Do you like the garments?
Yeah.
And it just throws off that rhyme. Yeah. Just a little bit, gives it a little bit of break, and then he comes right back in.
Yeah.
It's just that little thing, that little inflection. It just makes it so cool to me. Like, I just dissect that verse.
Yeah.
You know, because again, it's kind of a simple rhyme. It's fun.
Yeah.
But just those little things Fife is doing in there that just make it so much fun.
Yeah. Just add a little bit of, you know, flavor to it so it just doesn't get super repetitive. You know, like just right. kind of flip things a little bit here and there just to break up, you know, that repetitive flow.
Yeah. Rest in peace, Fife Dog.
Yeah.
We love
it. Yeah. Yeah. I think Fife was one of the most underrated MCs too from that era. Just
for sure.
Yeah. Just so good. The Funky Diabetic.
And of course he's, you know, he's in a group with Q-Tip, who's also one of the top,
yeah,
what, 5 or 10 MCs of all time.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, you know, he gets a little overshadowed because of Q-Tip, but yeah, I always loved Fife, man.
Yeah.
Nice.
What do you got?
Well, my choice is, I know that you probably, because I sing the praises of Biggie Smalls all the time and I say how he's my favorite rapper of all time. I didn't actually go with a Biggie song for this one.
Wow.
And again, I can't say that this is my choice for greatest verse ever. I don't think I could actually do that. It's the greatest verse that I'm going to talk about tonight, because I don't know if I could, because tomorrow I would probably go back to a Biggie verse. But actually tonight, man, I just felt like Wu-Tang has to be like in this conversation. And so I am actually going to present Inspecta Deck verse from the song Triumph.
Oh
yeah, dude, it's from their 1997 album Wu-Tang Forever. And again, Wu-Tang's got a million and one verses that you could pick for this topic, man, but I've just always loved this particular verse. The wordplay is just off the fucking charts, dude, and I could not even begin to get anywhere near a flow like Inspecta Deck. So I'm just going to read these lyrics. If they happen to come out a little bit poetic, fucking great. But I mean, just listen to this wordplay, dude. I bomb atomically Socrates' philosophies and hypotheses can't define how I be dropping these. Mockeries, lyrically perform armed robbery. Flee with the lottery, possibly they spotted me. Battle scarred shogun explosion when my pen hits tremendous. Ultraviolet shine, blind forensics. I inspect you through the future, see millennium. Killabees sold 50 gold, 60 platinum. Shackling the masses with drastic rap tactics. Graphic displays melt the steel like blacksmiths. Black woo jackets, queen bees ease the guns in. Rumble with patrolmen, tear gas lace the function. Heads by the score, take flight inside a war. Chicks hit the floor, diehard fans demand more. Behold the bold soldier, control the globe slowly. Proceeds to blow swinging swords like shinobi. Stomp grounds and pound footprints in solid rock. Wu got it locked, performing live on your hottest block.
Damn.
Dude.
God damn.
I'm out of breath and I was just reading it.
Right.
You know, good God, that wordplay is just sick, dude.
And that's what I love about Wu-Tang.
Yeah.
The number one thing, the wordplay.
Yeah.
It's so smart and so well thought out.
Yeah.
I mean, to drop a reference to a blacksmith.
Yeah, right?
I mean, come on, man.
Yeah. Melt steel like blacksmiths. And he wrapped it with, he rhymed it with rap tactics. I mean,
yep.
It's just, so good. So good. Mm. Every one of them is just phenomenal in their own right too. But yeah, that particular verse from Inspecta Deck is just all time classic, if you ask me.
Dude, that's it's sick.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah.
I'm sitting here listening to you read it. And I'm just like trying not to butt in and go, wow, dude,
I know, right? Yeah, man. And just reading the lyrics, man, I'm like, when we get done, man, I'm going to go listen to some Wu-Tang. I have to.
Oh, you know, all day tomorrow.
Right?
It's a Wu-Tang day.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. So, if you're listening and you don't know what we're talking about, God, go educate yourself on some Wu-Tang Clan. Just pick a record and jump in, man. Just everything they've ever put out has just been phenomenal.
Dude, Wu-Tang forever.
Absolutely. Wu was for the children. Rest in peace, ODB.
That's right.
So where are we going next?
This is going to be interesting.
Okay.
Now I want to talk about a song that either makes you cry or get emotional.
Okay.
And Eric, I'm dying to hear where you're going to go with this.
You know, I'm not even going to sit here and try and play hard and be like, yeah, well, songs don't really make me cry, man. No, dude, fuck that. There are some songs that can get me at least choked up, maybe shed a tear here and there, man. And I had a few on a short list, but one in particular, I may get choked up even just telling you the story, but there's one song in particular that always, 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 especially now, gets me choked up. And it's a song called Sometimes It Snows in April, which is a Prince track.
Oh.
It's from his album Parade, which was also the soundtrack to his film Under the Cherry Moon, which came out in 1986. And he wrote, performed, and produced the song with his guitar player and piano player, Wendy and Lisa, of The Revolution. They were still with him at this point. The song is about his character from the movie. He plays a character called Christopher Tracy in the movie Under the Cherry Moon. In the film, Christopher Tracy passes away. And so the song is written from the perspective of like the narrator, and he's kind of talking about Christopher Tracy's death, and also talking about how he one day hopes to reconnect with Tracy, you know, in heaven, in the afterlife. And it's you know, a beautiful song anyway. The melody is just gorgeous. Of course, Prince is a master lyricist. And in my opinion, some of the best work he ever did was when he was working with, you know, Lisa and Wendy. So it's an amazing song. Very simple, just, you know, acoustic guitar, piano, and Prince singing. It's beautiful. It was a tearjerker to begin with, but after, you know, Prince passed away, in 2016, the song found new life. It was never released as a single, so it never charted, you know, the first time around. But after his death, you know, a lot of people kind of rediscovered that track. And it actually started charting without even being officially released as a single in many countries in Europe. So it kind of gained a new life. But if you listen to the song now, it's almost prophetic, and it's just, you know, you're hearing, and he's kind of singing about his own death anyway, because he's singing about the character that he plays in this movie passing away. So yeah, you're kind of listening to him sing about his own death, and man, you want to talk about a track that can get you. If you're even mildly a Prince fan, that song can get you, you know, it'll get you.
Oh man, you've given me some homework to do.
It's a beautiful, beautiful song.
I'm just not familiar with it, but now I have to go listen to this song.
Yeah, the song having its second life, unfortunately, you know, after Prince passed. But that song gets me every time, man.
Wow.
Great, great track.
Yeah, man.
Actually, it's an amazing, that soundtrack, that album is really, really good anyway. There's a lot of great stuff on it, but that's definitely a highlight for me. What do you got? What gets you emotional?
Do you know the song Remember Me from the movie Coco?
I cannot say that I do. I did see the movie. I did. I just, that totally caught me off guard, man. I was waiting for like a Queen song or something, or like a John Lennon, you know, you're going to give me like Imagine or something. You come back with a Disney song. I can't say I remember the track, but I did see the movie. I did see the movie.
Okay. Okay.
That was great.
Okay, Coco, the 2017 Disney Pixar movie celebrating Dia de Muertos.
Yes.
So the young man, Miguel, you know, he's kind of confronted with his family's ban on music. And so he enters the land of the dead to find his great-great-grandfather, a legendary singer named Ernesto de la Cruz.
Yes.
Turns out great-grandfather's actually a guy named Hector who was killed by Ernesto de la Cruz. But Miguel has to get back to the land of the living to remind his great-grandmother, Mama Coco, of her father, Hector, before he's forgotten forever.
Right.
So when he gets back and he gets to Mama Coco and he's trying to get her to remember her father, he sings the song Remember Me, which Hector used to sing to Coco when Coco was a baby.
Yes, now I'm remembering it. Okay. Yeah, yes. Yeah, yeah.
And Mama Coco is super old. She's on the verge of dying. Her memory is shot, right? And the little boy is singing, "Remember Me." And Mama Coco starts singing.
Oh, my God.
And a tear starts coming out of her eyes. Dude, I fucking lose it, man.
That's awesome.
It's so goddamn touching, right?
Oh. I mean,
and the song, you know, obviously it makes you think about people you lost.
Yeah.
But also how you want to be remembered.
Sure.
And not be forgotten.
Yeah.
You know, which is kind of the theme of the movie.
Right.
But bro, man, I'm telling you, I catch Mama Coco singing that song and it's over.
Waterworks.
Actually, it's funny. I was just watching it over the weekend with my daughter, right?
Uh-huh.
And we get to that part and it's just me and her. My wife wasn't home. And my daughter looks at me and she's like, "Mommy always cries at this part." And I'm like, "Yeah, sit tight, kid, because you're going to see me cry in a couple of minutes."
I was going to say, are you just like, at this point, are you like choking him back or what? That's amazing. Oh, dude,
choking him back big time.
Oh, that's adorable, man.
Bro, man. But you're right. I could have gone with John Lennon or.
Oh, yeah. Yep, I was fully ready for a John Lennon, or even like I said, like Queen. Like they've got a couple that can get you kind of, you know. Wow, I did not see Coco coming. That was great, man. It's times like this I wish we did film these and like, you know, so people could have seen my face, dude, because it was probably a good like half a second of just sheer like what? Like I was so confused for a second. I was like, what did you just say? And then yeah. That's amazing. I love that choice. My God. That was good stuff, man.
Go watch that clip tonight when Mama Coco starts singing.
God, I'll be bawling. Crying like a baby, dude. That's a good flick, man. Now I want to go watch that.
That's a great movie, right?
Yeah, it really is. It was super cute. Yeah.
Mm.
So, here's a fun one. I kind of came up with this one last minute, but let's talk about television appearances by either bands or artists that are just kind of either legendary or, you know, really struck you as something special. It could be a performance. It could be an interview. It could be a cameo on a TV show. But you know, a rock star or band, you know, making a television appearance that just kind of did something for you.
I got two here.
Okay.
One being a guest appearance. I'm going old school, back to the 80s. I'm going Phil Collins on Miami Vice.
Oh, dude.
Yes.
That's a good one.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know.
Hell yeah.
The episode's great. He's like this con man / game show host or something.
Yeah.
But one of the reasons I remember that episode so well is not because of Phil Collins, but also on his game show.
Uh-huh.
One of the guests, one of the contestants is played by Emo Phillips.
Oh, my God. That's right. Yes. Wow, there's a name I haven't heard in a long, long time.
And he's doing his whole gimmick, you know, he's all confused and he's answering the questions wrong and he's all flustered all the time.
Yeah.
It's great.
That weird voice of his.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But then for like an ongoing role, I'd be remiss if one of us didn't mention Little Steven Van Zandt and The Sopranos.
Oh, and Sopranos. Yeah.
Silvio Dante. I mean, that's got to be up there. It's one of the greatest roles all time, number one, but just from a musician standpoint, a guy that didn't have any real acting ability.
Sure, but
David Chase created that role for him just because they liked him.
Yeah.
You know, so that's, to me, that's up there. He's got to be on the list.
That's one of those characters where I feel like the show just wouldn't have been the same without him.
Right.
You know? Yeah, that's cool, man. There's been a lot of rock stars that tried the acting route and it didn't always work out. You know, sometimes you just stay in your lane, but that was a good one. That was a fine choice. Cause he was fantastic on that show. Well, I've got a couple as well. Both of mine are more television appearances versus TV shows. But, the first one, I couldn't talk about this topic and not bring this one up because it's one of my all time favorites. I'm not the biggest Who fan. I like a lot of their stuff, but when you have the conversation of bands of that era, you know, it's always Led Zeppelin for me. It's, you know, The Who is kind of further down on the list. There's a lot of other bands I would put above them, but their exploding drum set on the Smothers Brothers Comedy Hour in 1967. If you've never seen this, please go to YouTube immediately and bring this up. Yeah, like I said, 1967, they were performing. I'm making the air quotes with my fingers because they were lip syncing. Everybody did. It wasn't, you know, that they weren't, you know, good enough to perform live. Just on television back then, everybody lip synced. That's how it was, just standard practice, right? So anyway, they were doing My Generation. And before the performance, unbeknownst to the rest of the band, Keith Moon, the drummer, had bribed one of the CBS stagehands to not only put explosives in his kick drum, which was kind of his shtick, he used to do this a lot, but he actually put like three times the amount that he normally put in there. Like normally there'd be a little boom and some smoke would come out and everything. He bribed this guy, he put three times the amount of explosives in his kick drum that he normally used. So at the end of the performance, you see, you know, Keith is standing up behind his drums and he's hitting stuff, and you see him, you know, stomp. It must have been like a trigger pedal or something.
Yeah.
But he triggers that thing, and holy shit, yeah, dude, the biggest explosion goes off, and the rest of the band, you see them, like, it scares the shit out of them. The shockwave was so big that it actually rendered the cameras blind for a second. Like, when you watch the clip, the cameras that are on the band actually go black for a second because the shockwave fucking shut them down. But the explosion was so big, a piece of cymbal broke off and cut Keith Moon's arm. Fire from the explosion singed Pete Townsend's hair. You see him patting the back of his head, and he's got smoke coming out of his hair. And then years later, Pete Townsend attributed a good portion of his massive hearing loss to that incident, that, you know, from the exploding drum. But holy shit, man, this is not rehearsed pyrotechnics. This is just rogue, insane shit from the 60s, man.
Can you imagine having a guy that unpredictable in your band?
Jesus Christ, dude. I mean, they called him Moon the Loon. He was out of his freaking skull, dude.
That dude was nuts. Like, we're going on national TV, and our drummer puts fucking explosives in his kick drum.
And then almost kills his band. I mean, if one of us, seriously, like, that could have gone wrong in so many ways, man. A little singed hair was nothing compared to what could have happened. Right. I mean, Jesus, I don't think he'd ever put that much in his drums before. So, yeah, who knows what could have happened. But luckily, everybody survived. But it made for just an iconic piece of television. So, again, if you've never seen that, it's The Who on the Smothers Brothers Comedy Hour, 1967. Go look it up. It is absolutely phenomenal.
Which was like this super clean family show.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Absolutely. Yeah. It was comedy, sketch comedy, vaudeville kind of vibe, you know. And so, yeah, they already, you know, took a bit of a chance bringing The Who on in the first place. And then that shit happens. Like, holy Christ. So I just, again, I felt like I had to talk about that at least for a minute. But the real one I want to talk about, this is my all-time favorite moment of rock stars or a band on a TV show, on a talk show setting. And it was your favorite band, Kiss. On October 31st, 1979, they were on the Tom Snyder's Tomorrow program. And this is some iconic TV, man. So by 1979, the wheels were already starting to come off the vehicle. Let's say the tensions in the band were super high. Only a short time after this interview happened, Peter Criss ended up quitting the band. You know, Gene and Paul were kind of trying to control everything. And then you've got Peter and Ace, who were completely out of control. And it was a recipe for disaster. So they're going on this show on Halloween night, 1979, and they're going to do this, you know, this interview, right? And so Tom Snyder is already warned by his producers ahead of time. He's like, look, you know, Ace is going to be a little tough to get to talk. He's very shy. You know, the other guys will talk your ear off, but Ace, he might need a little prodding. So in Ace's, you know, anxiety and stage fright, says, so he can go up and play his guitar in front of millions of people, but apparently when he had to go on a talk show, he freaked out. So he's just pounding Stoli, like, in the limo on the way to the show. And then he gets there, and their manager meets him with, like, a bottle of champagne in his dressing room. So he's in there, he's drinking a bottle of champagne. By the time cameras go on, and this is live, Ace is shit-faced. He is hammered. And everything just goes bonkers at like 18 seconds into the interview. You know, he starts, you know, by introducing the band, and immediately Gene and Paul, you know, jump in and start, you know, doing their biography of the band and who they are and what they do and blah, blah, blah. You know, all of this scripted shtick that they would do, right? And Ace... So Tom turns to Ace because he's already been warned, you know, this guy might need a little prodding. And Ace just goes off, man. And it's just one just zinger after another. Apparently before the cameras rolled, Tom had mistakenly referred to Gene as the bass player. He mispronounced bass and he said bass. So when the band is going around and introducing themselves, Ace introduces himself as he's like, yeah, I'm Ace Frehley. I'm a lead trout player. And, you know, so, and immediately just starts cracking up. Tom starts cracking up. He's going around, he's asking the band, okay, so Gene, you're the demon. And, Paul, you know, you're the star child. And, he says, Ace, you're like the spaceman. And he goes, actually, I'm a plumber, with his like thick New York accent. And again, they just start laughing the whole time. Gene and Paul are shooting daggers at Ace. And Peter, who was kind of like Peter and Ace, if you read their books and stuff, like they were like two peas in a pod.
Yeah.
So of course, Peter is just laughing his ass off, which is just egging Ace on even more. And he's just cracking joke after joke. And when he says he's a plumber, Tom says something about, oh, I've got a pipe I'd like you to look at. He goes, tell me about it. I mean, it's just the whole thing. It's so good. It's so good. And at one point he's got a little teddy bear and he's taking like his armbands from his uniform, you know, and he's putting them on the bear and he's like, I'm a space bear. And he's just saying all this ridiculous shit. And again, what makes it so funny is that Gene and Paul are just visibly pissed off. And it's just, it's uncomfortable and funny and just an insane moment. And Ace is just, and Tom is having the time of his life. Like, apparently I read that even after the show, Tom went to Ace's dressing room and they like hugged it out and was like, thank you so much. That was an amazing show. Like if Gene and Paul had done their thing, it would have been boring.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, Ace made the segment. So again, I encourage you, if you've never seen that, please go look that up. It is, just one of my favorite Kiss moments ever. So good.
I may have to go give this band a listen. This Kiss.
This Kiss, yeah. They might have a bright future, you know. All right. Well, that brings us to one of our favorite segments on the show, and we have a special guest.
Oh, my God. I can't wait for this. I cannot wait.
All right. So we are going to bring my lovely wife, Chris, in to do the Ride the Lightning Round. Mm. This is the first time we've ever actually had somebody come in that wasn't, you know, a guest on the entire show. So we're trying to, you know, change things up a little bit. We just thought, you know, instead of me and Mac asking each other questions, you know, why not make it a little more fun? Let's bring other people in. So without further ado, let's bring her in here, babe.
Yes. Hi.
Are you there? Hi.
I'm here.
There she is.
Hi. Long time listener, first time caller.
Well, we appreciate that. Thank you very much. Yep. Full disclosure, Chris is actually in another room of the house, so she didn't hear any of the warm-up to this, but she obviously knows why she's here.
I do. And I heard nothing to lead up to this, so this is exciting.
Okay. And you know how the Ride the Lightning Round works. I'm going to give you 10 this or that questions. The idea is to rapid fire answer. Try not to give it too much thought. And I made a bold prediction before we hit record tonight that you will probably have the fastest time in the history of the Ride the Lightning Round. I say that because I know you and you follow rules to a T. And when we say the idea is to do it as fast as possible, I know you and you're going to fly through this.
Yeah, but here's what's interesting. Because when I listen, I want to see how much of a hypocrite I am is really what I'm about to say. Is because like when I hear it, I'm like yelling into my phone, like, hurry up, don't think about it. But I'm pretty sure that now that I'm in the hot seat, like I'm going to also think about it. So.
Oh, okay.
We'll see how it goes. I'm going to try. I mean, everyone else, I know they get hung up here and there. And I'm like, even though I'm yelling at them. No, I think I'm going to be the same way. But I'm going to try not to. I'm going to try not to think about it and just.
Just go.
Just go. Fly.
All right. Yep. Well, I mean, that is the idea is that it's supposed to not be easy. You know, it's supposed to cause you some stress. So, well, I don't know. We'll see how I did. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Mac, are you ready?
Oh, I'm so ready.
All right, here we go. First off, Duran Duran or Foo Fighters?
Oh my God, Duran Duran.
Oh. Train or Gin Blossoms?
Gin Blossoms.
Wow, really? Okay. Beyonce or Rihanna?
Ooh, Beyonce.
Okay. Skid Row or Poison?
Skid Row.
See, I kind of thought so, but yeah. Hey, Poison had a lot of hits. Okay, Everclear or Pearl Jam?
Everclear.
See, I told you she's ripping through this. Alanis Morissette or No Doubt?
Alanis Morissette.
Damn. Mm. Madonna or Janet Jackson?
Madonna.
You paused.
I did.
I got a pause. I did. We've talked about Kiss a lot tonight. So Gene Simmons or Paul Stanley?
Can I pick neither?
No, that was the idea.
Oh my God. Okay. My head goes Paul Stanley.
Okay. All right. Yeah, see, Peter or Ace would have been easy. So I had to go with Gene or Paul. Yeah. Okay. Cinderella or Bon Jovi?
Bon Jovi.
Oh, wow. Okay. Mm. And then your 10th question, Black Velvet or Blaze of Glory?
Black Velvet. 100%. All day, every day, I will belt that song out.
We will go back and explain that in a minute. And I actually have a bonus. I have an 11th question. We're going to do a bonus round. You ready?
Yes.
Okay. We're going to talk drummers. Tommy Lee or your husband?
My husband.
Aww. Suck it, Tommy Lee.
Also, Tommy Lee scares me a little bit, so.
Well, I assume you mean from the waist down. That thing is terrifying.
Just in general. I'm just going to say in general.
We're not giving you specifics here.
Yep. I'm sure he's a very nice man. I need none of that going on ever. So.
All right. Well, at least one person in the world picks me over Tommy Lee. So thank you, baby. I appreciate that.
Pretty sure your mom would too. So
all right, thanks.
Two people.
Okay, yeah. I got a fan club. All right, is there any of those you want to go back, defend, explain, anything like that? I personally want to because I just want to explain the Black Velvet or Blaze of Glory, the two songs, Alana Miles, Black Velvet, and Bon Jovi, Blaze of Glory. Do you want to explain why I picked those two songs?
No.
Oh, come on.
I can, but I will also explain why I picked which one.
Okay.
So yes. So Black Velvet, in my youth was my karaoke jam.
And she kills it, dude. She kills
it.
Black Velvet, if you please.
Yes.
If you please. I've done it in front of people. So I feel more comfortable that that's the right answer. Blaze of Glory. I just like to belt out in the comfort of my own home
or car. Or car.
Or car with theatrics.
Yes.
Yeah.
Ooh, yeah, she gets really into it.
There's a lot of arm movement and a lot of like going ons and yeah.
Yeah. So. Very good. Very good.
Yeah.
I thought Duran Duran versus Foo Fighters would give you a little more pause. You were surprisingly quick on that one.
Yeah.
You love both of those bands so much.
I do, but I just felt like Duran Duran has been with me since childhood, so that was the right answer.
That is fair enough.
Okay.
That is fair
enough. Yeah, if I could go back and Train or Gin Blossoms, that one really, I might change that answer. I panicked. I might change it.
That's all right. I mean, hey, look, hit for hit, I think Gin Blossoms wins, but I mean, at some point, it just comes down to personal preference. We just joke because we've seen Train somehow, what, like 87 times?
A lot.
We actually have gone to see them, but like they were on so many like tours opening or whatever for other bands that we were going to see that we realized we're like, oh my God, we've seen Train like literally like probably 6 times. And we weren't always going to see Train, but they were always on the bill. It was weird. So we always joke about how much we love Train.
Just by default, we love Train.
Yeah, just because we've seen them so much. All right. Well, that was fun. Thank you, babe.
Thank you. I hope I answered quickly. It seemed like I was slow.
No, again, you still
win. Listen and see how much of a hypocrite I am.
Yeah.
No. Job well done, Chris.
Oh,
well
thanks.
Done.
Yeah. I enjoyed that. And you hammered through that pretty quick. You were faster than Brandon. I think Brandon might win for the slowest delivery so far.
Yeah.
He really struggled, man.
Well, he really threw him with some of those.
Oh, I beat him up really good.
He just couldn't pick.
Yeah, I beat him up really, really good. Oh, my God. All right. Well, cool. Thanks again, babe. Appreciate that.
Thank you. It was a joy being on here for the first time. Woo, woo.
Nice. All right. Well, Mac, what do we got on deck? We have any shout outs?
Yeah, just in general, just want to again thank everybody who's listening all over the world, all over the U.S. We're picking up listeners every day that are coming and checking us out, either checking out one episode or coming back for more and more and more. So that's great to see. On YouTube, we're getting a lot of great interaction. Nice. With people, some of the videos that we've been posting lately. So all positive, all fun. So everybody out on YouTube, thank you for the comments and keep it coming. We're really enjoying it.
Yeah, absolutely. We always are looking for any kind of show ideas, or again, if we said something that wasn't quite accurate, you know, call us out on it. Let us know. But yeah, definitely be in touch and let us know what you want to hear.
Yeah. Yeah. So like I said, check us out on YouTube and Instagram, Facebook, Threads. We're everywhere. Wherever you do your social thing, wherever you listen, rate, review, subscribe. We definitely appreciate that.
All right. Well, that's going to wrap it up for us. Again, Chris, thank you for being here. And we will be back with another episode real soon. Once again, it's the Greatest Mixtape Podcast. I'm Eric.
And I'm Mac.
And we will talk to you soon.